I'm really big on just trying to help as many people as possible and trying to help them basically be what that teacher was to me when I was age 11. And if I can build a legacy out of that, that's fantastic. So we've launched a magazine, we've got our podcast, we've got obviously the publishing company and a bunch of other businesses. But this year it's about, okay, how do we expand some of that? We're launching a second magazine. We're launching a streaming service. We're launching a bunch of different stuff to help entrepreneurs to get that breakthrough. And all of that is about leaving legacy. I mean, a lot of those aren't even monetized.
Welcome to the Midlife Fulfilled podcast. Are you over 40 and striving for more than just success, seeking true fulfillment? Well, on this podcast, we explore how to thrive in midlife across the five key life pillars: health, fitness, career, relationships, and legacy. I'm Bernie Borges, your host and fulfillment architect, here to help you design your most fulfilled life. Hit subscribe and start your journey to thriving today. Vince Warnock, welcome to the Midlife Fulfilled podcast.
Oh my goodness, Bernie, so good to be here, man. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you, Vince. So good to have you. Glad that you're healthy again. I know we had to reschedule due to that flu that's making its way around the world. I think my guests probably already picked up on the fact that you have an Australian accent and you are located in Australia. I'm in Florida, so we are on opposite ends of the world.
Yeah.
Vince, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
It's actually a Kiwi accent, New Zealand accent, but it's a hybrid, so most people can't tell anyway, but we're from New Zealand, but moved to Australia about probably 18 months ago.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as an American, I'm sorry to the ignorance here.
That's all right. You Canadians are forgiven. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm not the only American that can't distinguish the two.
Most Australians can't distinguish, so don't worry.
Yeah. Is that right? Okay. All right. Vince, I invited you on the podcast to have what I call a vulnerable conversation, because you've got a very achieved career. I mean, you've been an author multiple times over. You have a podcast that is approaching 700 episodes. I feel like a rookie at 225 or so episodes compared to that. You're a very accomplished marketing strategist. You're a coach, you're a speaker. But you know what I really want to know, Vince, is like, who are you? Like, what makes you tick? Let's start there.
Yeah, I love that. Well, the first thing is, as soon as you started reading out some of those accomplishments, I immediately tensed up on the inside and wanted to make a joke about every one of them and go, oh, and play them all down. So inside, the real Vince is just a standard insecure human being like the rest of us. So, I mean, I grew up in a very abusive home. So as a child, I grew up in a very impoverished area of New Zealand. We were a very poor family, and my father was a drug addict. And yeah, my five sisters, my brother and myself just grew up in a very horrible environment. So it's kind of an environment where you really couldn't stand out, like, as in you didn't want to stand out, because if you did, you were a target. So I had no voice, is how I like to word it. I had no voice for the first probably 11 years of my life. I mean, school was my happy place. Like, that was a way to escape any kind of abuse. But still there, I was really apprehensive to even speak out in a lot of cases, apprehensive to kind of put myself in front of others, because that was a vulnerable place for me. So it wasn't until the age of 11 where I discovered an incredible and very inspiring teacher who taught me, not only taught me a lot of academic stuff and things as well, but taught me to believe in myself and showed me that I didn't have to be defined by my past, or didn't have to be defined by my situation or my circumstance. And it had a profound impact on me, Bernie. It really did. I not only just started to believe in myself, it was the first time I ever felt hope, and I didn't know what that hope was. I just knew there was this weird bubbly feeling on the inside, and I'm like, this is really uncomfortable. I don't know what this is. Then figured out, oh, this is a good thing. So it was the first time I ever felt that and felt like I could believe in myself. But it also inspired me to want to help other people as well. And it's kind of, if I look at my entire career, I've gone in and out of entrepreneurship, in and out of corporate, in and out of different situations. And right now I run seven businesses, And it wasn't until actually last year, Bernie, I don't know if I told you this, but last year I was on somebody else's show and he kept grilling me about my seven businesses and going, but what's the connection? I'm like, I'm the connection. But you got a publishing company. Yes, because I'm an accomplished author and I love helping other people do this. We particularly work with neurodivergent people. He goes, yeah, but you run AI companies. And yeah, what's an area of expertise of mine? And you run marketing. Well, I'm known for marketing. And it wasn't until we kind of grilled me on it and got it down to, you know, the essence of what those seven companies were. And he kind of got me fired up on the inside. And he was going, but why, Vince? And I'm like, and I got all agitated. And then I turned around and I snapped at him in a good way. I kind of snapped at him. I said, because everybody deserves a voice. And he goes, there it is. And I went, oh, yeah, there it is. I realized that everything I do now is to go back to that childlike Vince and other people like that and give them a voice. So, yeah, so that's kind of what's on the inside. There is a jumbled mess of emotions, insecurity, so imposter syndrome, self-doubt, but at the same time, somebody who is passionate about giving other people a voice and the opportunities I never had when I was a child.
Well, that's an amazing story, and thank you for sharing that story. I'm sure, even though it was a long time ago, I'm sure those memories are still difficult. Boy, you know, what a wonderful thing that teacher took you, you know, under their wing and, yeah, and comforted you and coached you and really had a major, major impact on your, yeah, life that way. I'm sure that he or she, if they know that, they probably do know that it's something that's very fulfilling for them. And chances are they've done that with other people, yeah, as well. So you said something that I want to maybe unpack a little bit. Vince, sure. You said that, you know, you also want to help others because, again, you've got all these multiple businesses going on and you wouldn't be doing it if you didn't have a passion. I mean, skill set aside. I mean, I'm not even going to go down the path of skill set, but you wouldn't do it if you didn't have the passion. But part of that passion is the people that you're impacting. So maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we call them the Misfits Collective. It's a joke my wife and I came up with for all the people that we like, basically, because they all tend to be people that, like myself, felt like they never fit in. And, you know, through that childhood I talked about before, there was always an undercurrent there where I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And part of that is due to my neurodivergence. So I have ADHD. Which was very difficult growing up because they hadn't invented it then. So they didn't actually know what it was. They didn't know. I was just, you know, a little bit of a mischievous child who couldn't sit still, couldn't follow instructions and rules and all those kind of things as well. So the people I help now are very much kind of a reflection of that. They're very much the people that, you know, pushing themselves out there and wanting to help other people, but at the same time feeling like they don't fit in, feeling like, they don't have a voice, feeling like other people always seem to get the opportunities except them. And that's why with our publishing company, for example, we work a lot with people with ADHD and dyslexia and help them to write and publish books. And I can tell you now, Bernie, it is the most selfishly fulfilling thing I've ever done in my life. Like that moment where, you know, you've got somebody, like we've got one of our clients is dyslexia and had never, ever thought he could read or write, probably never thought he could be a published author. That was well beyond the realms of possibility. But he was determined that he really wanted to do this. So he had heard about us and the fact we created the ADHD publishing standards and all these kind of things and said, I need your help. So I went, right, okay, let's do this. When we sat on Zoom together after he had published his book, he got the Amazon envelope and he got to rip it open. I'm sitting there with him going, oh, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait to see the look on his face. He's going to lay, like everybody does. They light up, you know, their eyes glint and they get that little smile. So he rips open this envelope and he pulls out his book and he looks at it and he just goes deadpan. No emotion, nothing. And I'm like, my RSD, my rejection sensitivity, just kind of goes, oh my goodness, he hates the book. Like he doesn't like it. And there's something in him that just goes, this is not what I wanted. So I'm sitting there going, please respond, thinking, come on, give me something to work with here. And he just looked at me and burst into tears and just said, I can't believe I've done this. Like, I never, ever thought I could do this. And it was such a shared moment. And, of course, I stayed totally professional, Bernie. And, you know, I kept my – no, I bawled my eyes out, man. The two of us, two grown men, yeah, bawling our eyes out on Zoom. But it was such a special moment to see him and realize he now had that accomplishment, that thing that he never thought he could do. So those are my people, basically. My people are the people that never thought they could accomplish something but always had a desire to do it. And, and I help them achieve it.
Wow. That's a great story. You probably have more stories like that is what I'm thinking. God,
if I was to tell you every one of my stories, we'd be different years.
Yeah.
I'm a storyteller.
No, that's amazing. How do you integrate your family life? You know, you shared the vulnerability of your own upbringing and now you're a family man. So how do you integrate, you know, your family with everything that you're doing in your career?
Well, first of all, through a lot of mistakes. And by that, I mean, I was, you know, typical kind of ambitious entrepreneur type. And I remember when we suddenly found out that my wife was pregnant with our first child, who now, by the way, has just turned 28. So that was a long time ago. But when she was pregnant with our first child, I was, you know, I was the ever, ever diligent husband and, you know, soon to be father kind of thing. I was there listening to everything she said to me and every concern she had over, because back then we basically had no money. You know, we were very poor. We were very young. We're just kind of starting out in our careers. And I think she was still studying. So it was like, okay, I need to listen to her. And she was telling me all the things that we need, you know, how are we going to afford developmentally appropriate toys? How are we going to afford this? How are we going to afford that? And I'm going, you know what? I'm seeing a theme here. I'm thinking it's all how we can afford. I know what I need to do. I need to work harder. I need to work more. I need to work all the overtime I can in my day job. I need to work all the time I can on my side hustle business so I can raise more money. And therefore, she will be feeling happy. Which, of course, was the stupidest thing ever. So it meant I was out of home even more. I was just trying to, you know, push and push. And when our baby was born, I came home one day and my wife was just sitting in the middle of the living room, baby on the floor in front of her. And I just looked at her and realized she's broken. Like, this has been really tough on her. She had, you know, severe postnatal depression as a result and all this kind of stuff. And it's that moment that hit me like a hammer. I just looked at her and said, you needed me here, didn't you? She went, yeah. I said, I've let you down, haven't I? And she went, yeah. And it was a tough pill to swallow. It really was. I realized I had screwed up big time. But it taught me an incredibly valuable lesson that not everything I see is solvable in the way that I think it is, that actually I need to be really attentive and really understanding of what people are feeling and things, particularly my wife. So I changed it up. And when we had our second kid, it was about, okay, I want to be there. I want to balance this really well so that I can actually do it. And I thought, right, I'm going to nail this second time round, man. I've got this. It's going to be awesome. Our son got to the age of 12, and I was on the road nonstop at that point.
Your first son?
What's that?
Your first son?
Yeah. We've got two kids. Our daughter's our first, and our son was our second. He's just turned 22. When he was 12, we were in the middle of building a huge startup. It was a really high-growth tech startup. It was awesome, but I knew I was doing this for the family. You know, I was bringing them on the journey, so I would talk to them about what we're trying to accomplish, but then I'd be on the road all the time. And I came home from a trip. I'd actually come back from Sydney. We were at a conference in Sydney, and my son just sat me down. And he said, hey, Dad, can we have a chat? I said, yeah, sure. And he sat me down and said, look, I know you're building a really good company, but I think we need to spend more time together. And as a dad, when you hear that, there's two things that go on in me. It was kind of split down the middle. Half of me is like really proud of the fact that we created this environment where our kids could just be open and free with us, you know, could actually discuss things that are concerning them without feeling any kind of weirdness about it. You know, like it was just open to talk about that. And I was very proud of that. But then the other half of me was like, ouch, like, how did I not pick this up before? So I said, very good point. Hold that thought.
Hey, it's Bernie, and I want to take a moment to talk about something critical, employee engagement. Look, we know that most employees are disengaged from their work. Gallup research tells us that 77% globally and 70% in the U.S. are disengaged, and only 1 in 10 employees have the talent to be effective leaders. That's a problem. But here's the good news. We know that when employees feel valued, they become more engaged, more productive, and more loyal to the organization. That's where the Fulfillment-Centric Leadership Framework comes in. As the creator, I help organizations equip their leaders with the mindset and strategies to create a culture of fulfillment at scale. If you want to drive engagement and productivity in a way that actually works, let's talk. Bring me in to teach your leaders the Fulfillment-Centric Leadership Framework. reach out at the link in the show notes or at midlifefulfilled.com and let's start the conversation. And now, back to this week's episode.
Picked up my phone. He rolled his eyes because it was like, oh, Dad's on his phone again. But I rang my co-founders and just said, hey, that's it. I'm done. It was a Saturday morning, I think it was, when we did this. And I said, I'll see you guys in the office Monday, but we're going to hire someone to replace me. And, you know, because we had crossed a whole pile of milestones with the business, but I need to spend more time with my family. And when I got off the phone, three things happened. First of all, my co-founders were all swearing their head off at me, going, what? No, this can't happen. So they were freaking out about this. But I felt two things. I felt a huge sense of relief going, oh, my goodness, all the pressure of the business lifting off me. That is a good feeling. But I also looked at my son, and he just went, wow, that was easy. And he realized that he is a priority. My family are my priority and things. So from those mistakes, I learned a lot. But the key thing I learned was bring them on the journey with you. And my wife and I, we do daily walks where we talk, and I talk about, you know, the pressures of the business. She's actually in the business now with me, but we talk about the pressures of the business. We talk about what we want to achieve. We talk about our goals and our ambitions and everything. And we constantly talk about this because it's constantly evolving. You know, like every day we've got, oh, there's a new idea. And my team go, oh, no, not a new idea. My wife's going, hey, this is a great idea. But we get to talk about that and bring them on the journey with us.
Okay. So as you know, I've got my five pillars, Vince. Yep. Health, fitness, career, relationships, and legacy. So maybe you can remark on, you know, as you are in this stage of life where, you know, you really have this balance going on with between your family and all your multiple businesses, you know that you've been successful. So achieving success is probably not something, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it's not something you're chasing. It's something that you've been experiencing for quite some time.
Yeah.
But holistically, across those five pillars, remember, this is a vulnerable conversation. So across those five pillars, is there one or two pillar that you feel like you're really focused on? And I'll give you an example. For me, I'm still working on aspects of my career pillar.
Yep.
And I'm very much working on my legacy pillar. You know, and I want to believe that this podcast is a contribution to that. Yeah. So maybe you can remark on, you know, holistically, as you look at the full spectrum of your life and where you are, yeah, and then you look at those five pillars, what are you working on?
Oh, my goodness. Well, if you had asked me this, let's see, we're in February. If you had asked me this 2 months ago, it would be very different. But the two I'm working on, legacy, which I'm always working on anyway, and health at the moment. And that's the new one, because I kind of realized the end of last year I was pushing myself quite a bit because the legacy piece is really important to me. But the health was taking a hit as a result of that. I wasn't as active as I want to be and everything. So I make a competition out of it, as I always do. I put some goals down towards it as well. And wife and I joined a gym, which we're at now 7 days a week. We do like 8 or 9 sessions a week at the gym, but mixing in kind of aqua fitness and also, you know, gym stuff and group fitness and things like that as well. And just really enjoying that. And we're even in talks. You're going to be the first to hear this, to join a circus school. So I'm actually on the board of a circus school, a training facility in New Zealand. And we've found a circus hub here, which is teaches people how to do like aerial acrobatics and things. And we're like, you know what? Let's do it. It's crazy. It's kind of fun. And it'll be something that we can both work on our health together and get a bit more fit. So that's one pillar. The legacy piece, though, is always something that's a priority for me. I'm really big on just trying to help as many people as possible and trying to help them basically be what that teacher was to me when I was age 11. And if I can build a legacy out of that, that's fantastic. So we've launched a magazine, we've got our podcast, we've got obviously the publishing company and a bunch of other businesses. But this year it's about, okay, how do we expand some of that? We're launching a second magazine, we're launching a streaming service, we're launching a bunch of different stuff to help entrepreneurs to get that breakthrough. And all of that is about leaving legacy. I mean, a lot of those aren't even monetized. Some of those are not for profit. Some of those are just something where we just make it available for free for entrepreneurs because we want them to be able to have that leg up and have that opportunity.
Okay. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Back to your kids. What kind of advice have you offered your kids given, you know, the experiences that you've had throughout your life and, you know, some of the challenges you faced and sort of mistakes you've overcome, which, by the way, you know that that's true for all of us.
Yeah.
But what kind of advice have you offered them?
I think there's been two kind of pillars of advice that have been really important to me as a dad. And one of those is about making sure that you can control your own income. Like, it was really important to me that they know that you don't have to be beholden to some corporate job or some, you know, retail job or anything like that, that you can actually create your own wealth. And we instilled that in the kids from a very young age. I mean, that modeled it by showing them how we could build businesses and how money was actually pretty easy to make. And then both of them had their own businesses from age like 7. I think my son started when he was 7. My daughter started when she was 11. And they both had various different businesses over the time. And that, so that's been really encouraging to see as a parent. You're like, phew, we did that right. But the other one, and probably the more important one, was teaching them that you can't take things at face value, that you have to be incredibly curious about a life and about people. And I will share this story, but it was something that I learned when I was at high school, and funny enough, it started when I was 11. So very, very important time in my life, age 11, for some reason. But
yeah, I noticed that.
As well as having that inspiring teacher, I also found something else. I found a bully at school. And when you have a bully at school and you've got a bully at home, I suddenly had no safe space. So for 2 years, this bully made my life hell. Like, he was just an incredibly abusive person, just took joy out of really abusing other people. And at age 13, I went off to high school and he went to a different high school. So I'm like, yes, finally, I'm free from the tyrant, you know. And I also realized that my entire life meant that I was a victim, you know, as in I was someone who could be pushed around by other people. My father pushed me around all the time. This bully pushed me around. So I decided I was going to do something about that. I was going to learn how to defend myself. So kind of threw myself into martial arts, threw myself into boxing and kickboxing. And for probably the next, 5 years, I got to the stage where I was actually okay. That, you know, I certainly nothing to be scared of, but could defend myself. And that's when something weird happened. That bully got transferred to my school. It was my last year of high school. And suddenly this bully was there with me. And now I'm in a point where I'm not a victim. So I've seen every 80s movie, Bernie. I know this feeling where the nerdy underdog comes out on top. This was going to be a glorious moment. So he walked past one day and I yelled his name and an expletive or two. And he turned around and in this usual habitual thing, he just kind of stomped over and he took a swing at me. But this time, instead of, you know, taking a hit, I just moved out of the way and I'm like, nope. And he took another swing. I'm like, nope. And he took another swing. And I'm like, haha, I was playing with him. And then finally, he took a swing and it got a little bit too close. So I smacked him and I laid him out. He was on the ground unconscious. And that was the moment I knew I was going to feel good, but I did not. In fact, I felt terrible. I'm standing there going, why do I not feel good at all? Next thing you know, I'm in the principal's office. Now, which of course is what happened when you fight at high school. So sure. I'm in the principal's office and the principal pulled me aside. He pulled me into another room. And he sat me down. He goes, okay, Vince, I expected a lot more of you. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, you don't understand the situation. He goes, do you know why he was transferred to the school? And I'm thinking, man, he's making it about this guy. And I said, I have no idea. I don't care. You know, I was trying to be all staunch. And he goes, well, you should care. He said he was transferred here because his father had ritualistically abused him, his mum, and his sister all of their life. And he was an incredibly abusive man and abused the mother in front of the two kids so much that she actually she lost her life. And he basically beat her to death in front of the two kids. And I'm standing there now absolutely speechless. I'm feeling terrible. I'm like, well, I didn't know that. And he goes, well, then he had to move to his auntie's place, and that's why he's transferred to the school. And I said, well, I didn't know that. And he goes, no, I wouldn't expect you to know that. He goes, but of all the people that I thought would have understood what he was going through, I thought that would be you. And
he didn't know what he was going through.
No, exactly. But he basically saw, he thought I would see the patterns in this individual. And I realized, you know, when I started looking at it, I realized a few things. I realized, first of all, I'm not the hero of this story at all. I'm the villain. I'm the one person who had a chance to be there for this kid. And wasn't, you know, and I don't blame myself for that, but I do blame myself for not being curious enough. And in hindsight, it's very easy to see all of the signs were there. Very easy in hindsight. I could see that this kid was actually incredibly insecure, was very like desperately wanting people to like him. And the only way he knew how to do that was violence, because that's what he saw in the home. So it was, it also taught me, by the way, that every 80s movie lied to me. Like, don't believe 80s movies, any of you. They're all lies. Violence is not the answer to any of these things. But it was a really important lesson for me. And it made me realize that I have no idea what's going on in people's lives. I have no idea what's happening in behind their actions. So it made me be very focused on being curious about other people. And that's helped me at every stage of my career. It's helped me to understand people, like understand neurodiversity. I get really curious about it, and therefore I can be there for people like that. It helps me to deal with bullies and people that are abusive and things. So that was a really important lesson to instill into my children, was don't take things at face value. Always try and understand. Like, obviously, if someone smacks you in the face, that's a horrible thing to happen. And yeah, you don't want to just stand there and go, oh, well, that's nice of you. I wonder what you're going. Like, obviously, you want to get out of the situation. But be curious about that. Find out what's behind that. And,
So Vince, thank you for sharing that story. I'm curious, though, no pun intended, I am curious if you and that individual connected after that. Did you have conversation with him, or was that just the end of it?
I would love that to be the ending of the story, to go, hey, you know, I then managed to be there for him. But no, I was still, I mean, I was 17 at the time. I was still young and immature and things. And it took, like, even though that was an epiphany moment for me, it took me years to really embrace that properly. Sure. And he went off after that. He actually left school after that. He just dropped out. And I sadly don't know anything that happened to him after that point. But yeah, so thanks for bringing that up. No, check it out. Yeah.
Well, you remind me of a story in my own life, and it wasn't in my youth. It was actually early in my first business. So I was in my 40s, so hardly my youth. And I was at a networking event, Vince. And, you know, at a networking event, you're there to network. You're there to meet people and see if you can get some business from it. And I remember striking up a conversation with a gentleman. And he had quickly let me know that he had just been laid off from a company. He mentioned the company. I knew who the company was. Yeah. It was here locally where I live. And Vince, the first thought that ran through my head, and I'm ashamed to say this, but that's why I'm telling the story. The first thought that I thought of was, this guy is a waste of my time. I need to get away from him. Yeah. Now, again, I'm ashamed to say that, but here's the reason I tell the story. In the same conversation, because I didn't just rudely walk away from him, we stayed in conversation. He mentioned that the company that he was just laid off from was looking to contract with a digital marketing agency specifically to do SEO. And guess what I was doing back then? I was doing SEO. So I said, oh, wow, well, that's what I do. And he said, well, I can introduce you to the head of marketing. So he gave me the person's name. I contacted him, set up a meeting, and I got the business. And so I look back on that conversation and go, wow, to me, it was a God moment. Like that, like God put him in my path for a reason, because even though I had that selfish thought, which was a huge lesson for me, I've never had that thought again. I've never had a conversation with someone ever since then, no matter what the situation or circumstance. And so I've never thought this person's a waste of my time. Like so that's the value of the experience that I had. Like I've never, and I don't think I ever will have that thought again.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Yeah. I'm a firm believer in that as well. I don't have regrets as such, like even in that situation, you know, I wasn't the hero, I was the villain in that, and accidentally the villain in that situation, but I don't have regrets around that. I have learnings, and that's funny enough where Chasing the Insights came from. It's the whole thing of, I want the insights from those situations. I want to learn so they don't make those mistakes again. So, yeah, I love that story, man. Yeah, I'm a firm believer, too, that there is no wasted interactions with people. Yeah, as in, you know, if you meet somebody, always treat them with respect. I've found somebody who they wanted my help. They wanted me to help them with coaching them around marketing and things like that. And the more I talk to them, the more I realize I'm not the right person for them. And I just I had to be upfront with them and say, look, I don't think I can help you, and not from a skill perspective or anything, but I don't think you actually need what you think you need, because they thought they needed help with marketing to connect with their audience. But what I realized the more I talked to them was, they actually had to deal with their own insecurities. And they had a huge confidence issue. They even just trying to get, honestly, it was hilarious, Bernie, trying to get a marketing message out of them, like, what do you do? You know, like, tell me how you help people. And everything out of their mouth was a string of words, sure, that were all put together, but really didn't say anything. And I was trying to get to the heart of how they help people and what they're trying to do. And they just kept using bigger and bigger words. They kept trying to describe it. And I realized there's a hesitation in them to speak just normal plain English, because there's an insecurity around what they do. And they feel like, and I even asked them, I said, look, can I ask you, when you started doing this, did you get a lot of pushback from people who said, oh, what you're doing is just weird and you know, it's not real science and all this? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course. And I said, you feel like you constantly need to justify yourself to other people and justify what you do? And they went, well, yeah. And I said, well, there's the problem. The problem isn't with your marketing. I said, what you want to do is the money that you're going to pay me, don't pay me, go and find a counselor. Go and find somebody that can actually work through these insecurities, get you the breakthrough. Once you've got that breakthrough, come back and see me. And if it doesn't just suddenly all slot together, then I'm here for you. And so they did that. They went off and they got counseling, and it really did make a huge impact. They didn't need to come back to me afterwards. They filled their program. I was kind of like, damn, that was way too effective. I should probably learn counseling now. But it wasn't a wasted interaction. And the help that I gave, and I do this often, I give free strategy calls with people. And I get a lot of flack from other marketers going, oh, you shouldn't do that, man. You're just giving away your knowledge for free. It's like, well, it's not really. If you help someone, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Oh, no, I helped somebody. Oh, poor me. But the best that can happen is what usually happens, which is that person that I said no to, told them to go and get therapy. They introduced me to about six other people that became clients of mine.
Sure.
Because they were just like, hey, this guy here, you can trust him. He's not in it for the money. He's not in it for just trying to get the deal. He actually cares about
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Vince, we haven't known each other very long, and I don't know that we'll ever get a chance to break bread given the geographic, like how many oceans are between us. That would be very enjoyable if somehow that can happen. But in the meantime, I just want to thank you for giving me 30 minutes of your life to record this episode with me, this Vulnerable Conversations episode. I really enjoy these conversations, and I really appreciate you being available for this kind of conversation, because, you know, we could have spent hours just talking business and all the things you've accomplished. But I think the value of sharing your story and what you've learned and your point about being curious in everything in life, that's a very powerful and compelling point, and I want to thank you for that, Vince. And let the listener know if they want to connect with you and just learn more about you, where they can find you online.
Oh, I make it so hard for them. No, I'm joking. Just if you go to chasingtheinsights.com, that's my home. That's where you'll see my podcast, my books. That's where you'll see where to connect with me. Connect with me on social. I'm always keen to meet new people. And yeah, if you need help, if you really want to stand out in a very crowded market, you really want to become a thought leader, then book a call with me. We'll sit down. We'll come up with a strategy.
Cool. Well, Vince, my listener knows that'll be in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me for this vulnerable conversation.
It has been an absolute pleasure, Bernie. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way to the end. Since you're still here, I'm guessing that you're someone who's serious about thriving and fulfillment, whether in your career, leadership, or personal life. If you're a leader inside an organization, let's talk about how the Fulfillment-Centric Leadership Framework can help boost employee engagement and retention. Or if you're an individual looking for a thought partner to help you navigate a midlife transition, whether in your career or another key area of life, I invite you to book one of my limited free discovery calls for a private conversation about working together. You'll find links to both of those options in the show notes for this episode and also at midlifefulfilled.com. And remember, the opposite of inaction is action. If something in this message resonates with you, take action. I'm Bernie Borges, and I'll see you on the next episode.